supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Isn't technology really amazing when you think about it? Thanks to our mobile devices, we're not only a touch, literally a touch away from tracking down the top sushi restaurant in town, but some people are even finding ways of getting closer to the divine. With a little effort, we can build a cache of apps that promises spiritual inspiration or helps us with religious disciplines. These techno tools seem to help us strengthen and develop our faith, but some say they're pulling us away from our spiritual tradition or our communities, family, and even personal introspection. On today's show, spirituality and technology, the dance they do, sometimes merging together, sometimes pulling apart. We'll look primarily at communications technology, but we're also going to take a look at how technology is changing what it means to be a spiritual being. And later on the show, we're going to talk about what technology is changing what it means to be a human being.
I think everybody is so engrossed with the technology that humanity and the spirituality is just an afterthought. Spirituality is kind of, along with humanity, is going out the window. Everybody's in a video game.
Well, it could make you not like that faithful, because if you're like on the computer a lot and like you have church on Saturdays and you're on like Facebook or whatever, like you want to skip church or whatever to stay on the computer, which is not good. So it's kind of a bad thing and a good thing, but like I love my computer and my phones and stuff, so it's like a bad and a good thing.
I find it invasive sometimes. Invasive in the sense that it can change and manipulate our opinions on things. In particular, the religious radio that you can get almost anywhere you travel, and they're very, very persuasive. It sometimes also guides us in certain ways. When I listen to book reviews or explanation on music I've heard, so that encourages me to delve a little deeper into it.
Well, you know, I'm an educator. I work with middle school students and community college students. They're so connected through technology, smartphones, and video games, and I think one of the essential ingredients to spiritual life is solitude. But these students are so wired, the young people are so wired that they virtually have no time to themselves. They almost have no original thought, no time for speculation, no time for introspection. And the superficial relationships that young people have because of these technologies, it makes me feel vulnerable. Vulnerable to being misled and also kind of gutted. So that they're being robbed of the opportunity of having personal depth, spiritual awareness. So I think that there are some pretty profound consequences to the spiritual lives of modern Americans, particularly young people.
You can do anything spiritually online. You can listen to sermons online, and you can just learn about different religions via internet.
Yeah, I really like the way it is, you know, that technology and Christian programs or faith is all connecting together, is all one. And people can go on the internet, can watch the TV and still get the information with, you know, going on with their Christianity.
That was Emily Haas speaking with two diners at the Reading Terminal Market. She also produced that piece for us. Thanks a lot, Emily. So, spirituality and technology, that's what we're talking about today on Voices in the Family. My guests are Darlene Weaver, Jim Cacamo, and later we'll talk with William Schweiker. Darlene is director of Villanova's Theology Institute. She's an associate professor of Theology and Religious Studios. Darlene, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Jim Cacamo is an associate professor of Christian Social Ethics in the Department of Theology and Religious Studies at St. Joe's. And he also joins us here in studio. Jim, thanks for coming all the way down from City Line Avenue.
Well, thanks for having me.
And our phone number here is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear your thoughts about your own spirituality. Has technology improved it, or is technology pulling you away from it? And same with your thoughts about your children. Later on, we'll talk with Bill Schweiker. He's a distinguished professor of theology and ethics at the University of Chicago Divinity School, and he's director of the Martin Marty Center for Advanced Study of Religion. Well, I'd like to start the discussion with you, Jim, if we could. I'm on a couple of boards, and that's including one at my synagogue. And the more and more I see people checking emails and stuff during meetings, and if that's happening at board meetings, you know it's happening at churches and synagogues where not every moment is riveting, I must say, with all due respect to my rabbi. So what's happening here? I mean, when we're in our houses of worship and we're not in our houses of worship.
Well, I think there's probably a bunch of different things going on, but I, you know, listening to the piece that started the hour and thinking about American culture right now, I think we live in a culture that prizes the new. Has prized the new for many, many years. We're the new nation with a robust economy that's focused on creating the newest things around the world, be it shipping with rail and, you know, all kinds of transportation and communication technologies with television. For years we've been this way, and I think one of the things we're seeing is just this allure of the newness of technology. The gadgets that we have, they're exciting. They fire neurons in our brains because we feel good because we got an email and we like to be in touch. And we don't always necessarily take the time to step back and say, what are the boundaries? I think we may be better at setting boundaries for our kids because we know the long-term impact of that, and we don't always necessarily set those boundaries for ourselves.
You know, we like to be in touch, and yet everything we know about well-being, spirituality, being in touch with the divine, is about the opposite. It's about quiet and reflection. It's not about being in touch. You know, it's about having these moments. You're making a face, Jim.
I'm not sure I entirely would agree with that. I mean, I think partially, you know, coming from the Catholic tradition that I am coming from, not only is there the component of sort of removal from the world and quiet and contemplation, but there has always been the other side of that, which is encountering God in the world and work that we do in the world to help people's lives improve, to care for the needy stranger, seeing the face of God in the world. And so I'm not sure that it's as easy to sort of disentangle the centrality of relationality, ourselves and God, but also others.
Let me give out those phone numbers. I'm told I forgot to give out the phone numbers. It's 888-477-9499. We're talking about spirituality and technology. How do they work together? How don't they work together? Give us a call. Love to hear your thoughts and your experiences. 888-477-9499. Darlene, I want to get back to these board meetings that I talked about. You know, when I first saw it, I would watch these people, and I hate to admit this, I was feeling critical inside and judgmental. And at our most recent board meeting, I found myself checking the Phillies score because I got an app for that. And I was doing it more than once throughout the meeting. I hope nobody's listening from the board. But so 5 years ago, I could have lived very nicely without knowing the Philly score. And now it seems like I need to know the Philly score. Do you think this sense of urgency harms rather than enhances our spirituality?
I think that it can. The example that you're giving, to me, smacks of distraction or distractibility. And anybody who's made any kind of even half-serious attempt at spiritual growth knows that whether you're talking about meditation or some form of centering prayer or contemplative prayer, that one of the great challenges there is our distractibility, the stream of consciousness that seems to run endlessly inside ourselves. I would want to split the difference between your earlier point about solitude or detachment and Jim's point about relationality and being involved in the world, because I think that the spiritual life is about self-acceptance and self-transcendence, or put differently, authenticity, but cultivating that in a world of others. And there are always temptations or impulses that can pull us from the interior work that we need to do, such as the attentiveness to others and to things that you value, such as this enterprise, right? That might be taking shape in a particular board meeting. So it's a lot easier to disconnect from that and check on the game. But if you didn't have an app for the Phillies game, you might be fantasizing about something else or mentally constructing a to-do list or a grocery list in your head anyway, so that being able to check the Phillies game just becomes another example of the sort of way in which we can disconnect from what is the matter at hand, rather than marshaling the resources and the discipline needed to be present to something that is truly other. Whether that has to do with the interior work that happens in meditation, say, or being present to others in a valuable enterprise like a board meeting, which, granted, can be tedious and valuable, but nevertheless.
And boring valuable. Sometimes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
That's what you meant. That's what you meant by tedious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Jim, how do we do this work? It sounds like you're both agreeing that we need to find boundaries. We need to find a way not to distract ourselves and to get close again to what's important to us. Okay. How?
Well, I think we, you know, and I probably would need to jump off here as well from what Darlene is talking about. I mean, that disconnecting from the matter at hand. I think one of the great difficult things in life is to remember the big picture. To remember in the board meeting, when it might be tedious and/or boring, that there's a reason for being there. Right, and the reason for being there is not necessarily just to get the job of the work of the moment done, but to get the long-term job done. And that we have to really keep our minds on what's the goal in our life, in whatever it is we're doing. And that, you know, I have a regular conversations with my students who just don't want to turn their phones off during class or board meeting. And, you know, I remember a very some students who were very upset with me and said, well, what if somebody dies? And my answer was, they'll still be dead in an hour. You'll be able to drive home and be with your family. That the long – you don't need to know that now, because if that were to happen, what's the long-term goal? The long-term goal trajectory is to connect with the people you love around you. The long-term goal of education is to learn something. And that maybe the immediacy contradicts the long-term goal. I don't think we think enough about what our long-term trajectory is, what the telos of our general actions is.
Right. I spoke about well-being, mm-hmm, earlier, and what goes into well-being, and part of it is really about experiencing the life you're in, experiencing this moment, and being able to know what your life is really about and making sure you're living your life consistent with your deepest values. And that's a psychological position, but I'm sure it's also a theological position, Darlene.
Yes, absolutely. You know, faith traditions can assist us in being more intentional about our use of technology. They can help us to clarify exactly what our most fundamental values and commitments are. They can provide reminders as well as ritual practices and symbols that help, that can help to redirect our attention. Being invested in a concrete community of worship means sticking it out through thick and thin with others, not all of whom we like or agree with, and that can help us to be accountable and honest. And all of these are really important elements in some kind of ongoing growth in our spiritual lives and in keeping us loyal to those things that matter most.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Pam on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Thank
you for taking my call. I wanted to say that in my house, I have a tendency to tell my 15-year-old and 19-year-old to come out of the matrix. And I think you know what I mean by that. This is a movie that deals with people being zapped into the actual power and digital space. And I find myself having to beg them to, and pull them out of it as if I am in some science fiction movie. Because at my age, looking at 15 and 19, I really want them to understand the process of quiet and patience and the kind of spirituality that comes from just being aware of the world around you. And your guest spoke about accountability and honesty. Well, on Sundays, I say, please, no digital devices. Let's just have no digital distractions and just kind of be with each other. But if I leave one room and go back in the room and see them with their digital devices, then now we have a conversation about accountability and honesty and trust. So I find that the matrix is sort of getting between my children and their spirituality. And if you're not on top of that as a parent, you find that they are really drawn to this, such immediacy that they lose that beautiful process of understanding patience.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but I would also add one other thing before we go to our guests. It also sounds like technology is getting not just between your children and spirituality, but getting between your children and you.
Well, yes, to a certain extent. I really make an intentional effort every day to have one-on-one time with my children, because my 15-year-old is actually, she's given a laptop to go to high school. So this laptop is on her lap.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So I have to say, look, turn it off. I know you don't have that much homework. Let's read together.
I think...
So I'm creating activities around this one-on-one communication.
Pam, I think that's a great idea. Let's hear what our experts have to say on this, and thanks so much for your call. I just want to add a P.S. She talked about her 15-year-old with a laptop. I've got one of my closest friends is 3 years old, and he's living at my house now. And you know what he wants for his birthday when he's three? Wants an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Wants an iPad. So either of you have thoughts about what Pam offered about how it interferes, the need to disconnect on Sundays especially, or Saturdays?
Pam spoke to both the way that technology can assist but also can hinder. And I have two examples of that. I had to deliver a paper at a conference in Israel, and I was able to use Skype to stay in touch with my family. So there I am, thousands of miles away, but I could see my children and my husband each night. And And I have young children who aren't great talkers over the phone, but being able to see me on the screen enabled us to maintain a connection while I was away. This is a good thing. But I've also been out at restaurants and seen families where, you know, the children are sitting at the table. It's a family dinner, but they're busy playing handheld video games, and the parents are texting other people or watching a TV that's up in the corner of the restaurant bar or things like that. And that doesn't really seem like family time to me. So again, I think it comes back to this issue of an intentional use of technology.
I want to turn to you on that point, Jim, that I was surprised to read in one of your articles that the Catholic Church takes a solidly positive view of communication technologies. What did they say? What was their rationale?
Well, the view that's been throughout the 20th century is that there's two ways in which technologies, be they social communication, media, mass media sorts of things, or now social communication, in terms of web and cell phones and that sort of thing, are one, they have a real good power to connect us to one another. When I talk to my students, I mean, I think back to when I was in college and we had one phone on the floor that we all shared, and people got mad if you made too long of a long distance call. And I would talk to my folks every, you know, couple months. To now, when I ask my students, how many of you have talked to your folks this week? Everybody raises their hand. How many of you talked to them today? 2/3 of them will raise their hand. I mean, the kind of connections that people can keep are really powerful and strong. So helping us maintain communities, and we think not just one-on-one, but I think of the kind of, you know, business intelligence and information that small startup companies can get really helps them often do a better job at business, stay in business more, and then ideally, you know, you're giving jobs to more people, which is putting more food on people's table. So creating community, really, and those social things we need to keep the wheels of society rolling, but also a way in which we learn personally. Certainly, as I think one of the people in that first montage talked about, you can go online. You can talk to learn about faith traditions that are not your own. You know, I haven't bought the lectionary, the daily lectionary. It's an expensive piece of paper, big book, so that I could read the scriptural readings of the day that are done at Mass. But I can get that online very easily. So it enables me, without the kind of resources necessary to necessarily buy that book, to connect with some important resources of my faith tradition.
Yeah, and even ones that, you know, don't involve reading. I've got mm-hmm. an app that I use every morning to help me with my meditation. It's a Buddhist
Absolutely.
Meditation app. Well, unfortunately, we've got to take a 1 minute break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Bill Schweiker, who's a distinguished professor of theology and ethics at University of Chicago Divinity School. We're talking about spirituality and technology, what it means to be a spiritual being. Bill is going to help us understand how technology might inform what it means to be a human being. I'm joined here in the studio by Darlene Weaver. She's a director of Villanova's Theology Institute and associate professor of theology and religious studies. Jim Cacamo is an associate professor of Christian social ethics in the Department of Theology and Religious Studies here at St. Joseph's University. Our number is 888-477-9499. If the lines are busy, please be patient. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb, and you're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Are you frustrated with an adolescent who is using drugs or drinking? Have you argued, threatened, or pleaded with them to stop? The Family Training Program is conducting a research study that may be able to help. If eligible, you will be invited to attend individual sessions and complete questionnaires. This study is held in Philadelphia by the Parents Translational Research Center of the Treatment Research Institute. For study details, 877-IWORRY2 or IAMCONCERNED.org. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase congratulates its 31 top docs and commends all the professionals who deliver team-based care at Fox Chase every day. At Fox Chase, their mission is to prevail over cancer, marshaling heart and mind in bold scientific discovery, pioneering prevention, and compassionate care. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Well, technology and spirituality is an issue of great interest, certainly to many of our listeners. Our phone lines are completely filled and have been from the beginning of the show. As promised, we are being joined on the phone now by William Schweiker, who's a distinguished professor of theology and ethics in the University of Chicago Divinity School and director of the Martin Marty Center for Advanced Study of Religion. Bill Schweiker, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you all.
I'm also Bill, Darlene Weaver and Jim Cacamo will continue to be with us throughout the rest of our show. Bill, I want to start with, with you. Before our break, we were talking about, asking about some of the big issues in life. You delivered a paper at Villanova recently called Children of a Better God, in which you talked about the whole field of transhumanism. What's that?
Well, I think what we have to grasp is a fundamental issue here about the oddity of being human, and then we can understand transhumanism. Human beings are creatures who aspire to become different than they are through education, so we expand our minds, through athletics, we improve our bodies. Through technology, we create means in which we can communicate, which we can alter our environments. As human beings are aspiring creatures. We seek to transcend ourselves. And the deep religious question is the nature and character of that transcendence. Transhumanism is a movement that is concerned to use technology to transcend or overcome human nature, particularly to overcome aging, to extend our capacities, and therefore at root to overcome our vulnerabilities and even our fear of death. And this poses a major question in the popular moral imagination of our society, but also within the religions themselves, and that is it good to be only human? Or is the real deep human quest to somehow become completely different than we are?
What's your answer?
Myself, I think, ironically, the religions commit us to being only human, and then ask or pose the question of what is the way we live most humanly, or truly human lives. I think it was yourself and Jim talking earlier about connections and finding God in the world. Well, that's a question about how, within the limits of our humanity, we nonetheless can live truly and deeply by connecting with that which transcends human life, that is to say, God.
But you're raising a question about whether it's good to live only as a human, facing inevitable death, subject to pain and grief, and experiencing delight and awe. Not to mention love. So, gee, what's not good enough about that?
Well, I believe, I'm not sure if it was Darlene or yourself was asking the question about setting limits, or maybe it was one of your folks who called in, I think her name was Pam, setting limits. Well, in a sense, that's the big question here. Are there limits to our humanity, and are those good? Is it good to confront those limits, both the joy of love, but also, quite frankly, the agony of seeing those we love die and facing death ourselves?
Oh, great. We've got three theologians and a psychotherapist here, and all any of us know how to do is ask questions. this is a problem.
Well, if I may, Part of the reason that we pose these as questions is because these are the dilemmas that each human being must live out for themselves. I don't see the job of the theologian or the ethicist as giving a tick list of what is required to live a truly human life. As Darlene said, our religious traditions can help us do that, but at root, we each have to confront these questions ourselves. So I think folks like us have a predilection to ask questions because we are concerned to empower people to confront their own lives.
And you know, you use the word ourselves and our own lives. Darlene, don't we have an ethical responsibility to care for our progeny, to not just to be role models, but, well, I guess to be role models about what? About what it means to be human, what it means to be a spiritual being?
Well, yes, absolutely we do. I think that part of the wisdom of the Christian tradition is that that growth in the spiritual life is about confronting reality, not escaping from it. And so there aren't inherent problems with technologies. They're not inherently bad. None of us are Luddites on the panel. But insofar as they provide additional mechanisms and facilitate our escape from issues within ourselves, issues within our families, issues within our world that need to be confronted and addressed, then they can tempt us away from the work that we need to do. And I think that as parents, we can model for our children values of accountability, responsibility, openness, honesty. We can show them that we make solitude a priority and that we make ongoing connectedness or involvement with other persons a priority in our lives.
And, yeah, and with the larger world.
Yes.
The one thing I tell parents over and over and over again is we need to be role models for love. For love.
Yes.
We, you know, and not just spousal love and not just parental love, but love itself. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Peter on the line. Peter, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Dan, good to talk to you. My name is Peter, and I'm a former clergy, and I've been working the last 20 years as a psychotherapist. And your discussion triggers for me some thoughts that I have read in Paul Tillich, where he makes a distinction between the horizontal and vertical dimensions of life. And, of course, we live in the horizontal, where we act and live and breathe and have our stuff, but it distracts us from the vertical dimensions of life, which have to do with courage and faith and hope and love and acceptance and all of that. So my distinction is, borrowing from Tillich, a horizontal dimension versus a vertical dimension and trying to meet in the crossroads of those two. Being is one of the things that I think is very important in your discussion this morning. This is not a critique. It's a very interesting and valuable discussion. But a lot of the focus has been on doing, which is, of course, valuable. But my own existential background leads me to also include the reality of being.
Yeah, and I think we have touched on that, and I do agree with you that it's you know, I think in a crisis it's important to do nothing, you know, and reflect, and I think ask those big pictures. I think Jim, you alluded to it. You know, what's the big question? You know, and you can only do that by being. You know, it's the only way we can answer those questions.
Yeah, but I would also, I don't think I necessarily would, again, pull apart being and doing entirely. I mean, we're material beings as well as spiritual beings. And sitting and reflecting is a doing. And being quiet is a doing. And so all of our experience is mediated through the senses, through our powers of knowing, and through our bodies. And so I think it's hard to necessarily pull those apart so cleanly.
Yeah, Bill, I want to come back to you on this about, you know, we can't really split apart, you know, even in your field of human and post-human, as you describe it. I'm a quadriplegic, so I'm pretty familiar with new research and technologies for spinal cord injuries. And there's one intervention where a person with spinal cord injury wears an electronic apparatus of braces, and with the help of brain waves and electronic stimulation, they're able to walk like a robot, but still kind of ambulate themselves. Is that post-human, really?
Well, the issue here is not the therapeutic use of various technologies. I've been through a open heart surgery myself and have a mechanical valve in my chest, so I would be the last one to be against the therapeutic use of certain technologies.
Right.
The question is whether or not the purpose of the technology is to transform and transcend our human nature. Where one sees this most graphically is in decisions about altering genetic structures for future generations.
Right.
And at that point, you're making decisions about the shape, quality, limitations, and capacities of those who do not yet exist in a way that's robbing them from the primal human problem, and this is back to doing and being. The fact of the matter is that human beings are creatures that are condemned to make choices. We have to choose what to do with our lives, with our time, our loves, to attend to those we care about or not care about. And so the quest to rob someone of that fundamental capacity but also burden of making choices is very dangerous. And some of the applications of technology to alter future generations, I think, is very dangerous myself.
Darlene, what about your thoughts to take off on what Bill said about designer babies? I mean, we're around the corner from that, if not there already. So we can wipe out things like, theoretically, things like autism. And, you know, we already can wipe out things like Down syndrome if we so choose. So is that improving our humanity, or does it take something away?
I think it, well, again, one would need to really go technology by technology or issue by issue and make, I think, responsible discriminations among the ways in which we can enhance human well-being. But also, I think, turn a vigilant and critical eye at the ways in which we marshal our energies and resources to try to rule out the sorts of vulnerabilities and limits that are simply endemic to being human. So we do have the capacity already to make designer babies of various sorts. But then that, to me, bypasses the question of, well, what's the nature of parental love? And is it part of parental love that one accepts the child that comes to one and endeavors to accept them unconditionally? That one, as that child's being and nature unfolds, that one tries to or engages in an ongoing process of accepting that other as who he or she is.
Yeah, and parents might argue that they would make those choices to relieve their future child of suffering, but
sure.
But that makes an assumption that a child with some forms of autism or suffering, my grandson has autism, or people with some disabilities are
right.
Or suffering, and
right.
By and large, they don't. They
right.
Don't suffer.
Yeah. Well, and there's a woman who's been in the news recently for injecting her, I think, 8-year-old daughter with Botox, for instance. And so on the one hand, she exhibits some ostensibly altruistic motive that she wants to somehow ensure her daughter has a better life as some future movie star or model or something. But, you know, this goes back to the question at hand, which is, you know, is the meaning of being human and is human happiness finally come come with an acceptance of our limitations and our vulnerability, rather than a dogged effort always to evade those or to escape those limitations.
Well, let me make a comment before I take our long overdue break. I've been late for all my breaks on this show, but it also. I want to come back to what Jim said on this issue, and the Botox example and the future generation designer babies demands of us that we think about who we are and who we are and what we want in life and what being alive really means to us. And only when we have those answers can we make those decisions about our progeny. We've got to take a short break. I'm not going to give out our numbers again because our lines are completely filled. My guests are William Schweiker, who's a distinguished professor of theology and ethics at the University of Chicago Divinity School. Jim Cacamo is associate professor of Christian social ethics in the Department of Theology at St. Joe's. Darlene Weaver is director of Villanova's Theology Institute. She's also an associate professor of theology and religious studies. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Have you been feeling anxious, worried, on edge? The Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit at Penn Medicine is studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of natural supplements to treat the symptoms of worry and anxiety. Initial evaluations determine eligibility for treatment. To learn more about Penn Medicine's Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit, 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
The indictment of French economist Dominique Strauss-Kahn on sexual assault charges leaves the International Monetary Fund without a leader in the midst of a global economic crisis. But what exactly is the IMF and who should run it? Is it time for Europe to step aside and let emerging economic powers like China and Brazil have more say? That conversation next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about theology, spirituality, and technology with Darlene Weaver, who's director of Villanova's Theology Institute. Jim Cacamo is an associate professor of Christian social ethics in the Department of Theology and Religious Studies at St. Joe's. Bill Schweiker is a distinguished professor of theology and ethics at the University of Chicago Divinity School. Let's get right to the phone lines. We've got Matt on the line. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Hi.
Not to critique or criticize or be controversial intentionally, but I think as far as social networking sites goes, the actual windfall kind of goes to the atheists and agnostics. There's always been churches. There's always been an outlet for people that want to go out and find a synagogue or a church. For thousands of years, it's been like that. It's only recently that you can actually go out and express yourself as non-spiritual. As an atheist, I'm very glad it's like that now. It wasn't that long ago you'd be associated with communism and a number of other unsightly things. And now you can actually find people that agree with you, which is living new development.
Yeah, and that's great for non-believers. I think you're right. I think the internet is giving everybody a voice, and by and large, that's good news. Of course, in some respects, it can be bad news, but by and large, it's good news. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Lisa on the line. Lisa?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call. And seeing that the show is called Voices in the Family, it leads right into my topic that faith and technology in our household is demonstrated in our family, particularly by my husband and myself. We're active church members,
We do our best to help people in the community and friends in need. But we're also very tied into technology, and it's part of our lives, but we use it as a tool. It's a tool to our lives. It's a tool to what gives us life and breadth, our faith, our love, our family, our friends. They're tools.
How so, Lisa? Give an example.
We're able to communicate with our friends. We're able to talk to someone in need. We're able to Google a charity that might need some assistance. We're able to look for somebody that we haven't been able to find, that we haven't been able to be in touch with. For example, just on the phone and the computer. Hmm. We're very tied into other things, and we use them also as toys. We like to play games at times on our iPad, for example, or computer or Wii system. However, there are limits, because life comes before these things. They're part of life.
And you and your children are all on the same page.
We are. Now, granted, one is 19 months and the other is 9. But the 9-year-old is growing up in a household where he's still encouraged to have an imagination, where he's encouraged to go to church, and he's encouraged to pray. Every night before bed, he doesn't ask to play a game. He doesn't ask to play a video game or anything like that. He asks for prayers. And that's also, it's always been a mainstay in our life, been a mainstay in our household. Hmm. And it'll always continue to be so. It's an anchor for him, and it's an anchor for all of us.
Yeah, that's good role modeling for the kids, and it's good role modeling for our listeners. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, and I just...
Dan?
Bill?
Do you mind if I jump in for just a second?
No, please.
I think this was a very important point, but also the question of what is technology is maybe a little more complex, because it is both a tool, but it's also become a framework of meanings, as the previous caller before Lisa noted. It's the way we shape and see our world. In that way, technology is a lot analogous to language. On one level, language is a tool we use to communicate with each other. But anyone who's traveled to a country and you don't know the language, you realize that your own language shapes the way you see the world and can communicate. So I think the whole question of technology is operating on two levels, and we need to be aware of that when we discuss these matters.
Yeah, and we hear a lot of people being afraid of technology, but, you know, I grew up in the, well, I was born in the late 40s, and people were afraid of television back
right.
then, and I'm sure in Gutenberg's time, they were afraid of the printing press.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we have to remember is that we're living in the world we live in. We can't go back and live in some other age when spirituality was easier to do and the world was less distracting and an agricultural, you know, on the kind of a different time schedule. We live now. And the caller talked about, I think, underlying a kind of intentionality about a way of framing not only the way they do things around their house, but the way they think of what it is, you know, kind of what the ruling metaphor, what the ruling frame is going to be. It's going to be faith, not technology. And, you know, that's the most important thing, I think, to how are we going to be spiritual people in the world we live in today? And it takes a kind of intentionality about choosing one's frame of reference and choosing what particular things you're going to do.
So it's a question, Darlene, of waking up in the morning and making a choice about your life that day, how you want to live it. You know, following up on what Jim said about intentionality.
I think that's true, although even putting it that way seems to maintain something we haven't really acknowledged yet on the program, which is the issue of power, right? So I absolutely, and I've already said, think that intentionality about our use of technology is important. But I think part of Bill's point, by responding to the caller and saying, well, yes, technology is a tool, but it's not only that, is to recognize that technology isn't unidirectional. It's not simply a way in which we exercise power over the world around us. It has a reflexive impact. It acts upon us. It shapes us. It redirects our capacities, and it informs or orients or perhaps distorts our perceptions of reality, our value systems, our sense of the possibilities that are open to us, of what's worth pursuing, and so on and so forth. And one of the things that, that faith traditions can do is to engage us with respect to these questions about power and the extent to which we're in control of our lives. So, you know, in the Catholic and Augustinian tradition in which I operate and which provides the mission for Villanova University, there's a lot of realism about the limits of our own power. So we could muster our will and say, I'm going to be intentional about my use of technology, but we need assistance that is not simply at our disposal. It's not about bootstrapping ourselves into greater intentionality. We need assistance from others, and as a Christian, I would say we need assistance from God as well in order to embark on the kind of journey in which we come to terms with our limits.
Couldn't that be part of our intention in the morning?
Yes.
Is to open ourselves to our own spirituality, to live that day aware and awake the best we can be. I love the point you make, and I think that's a lovely point to end on. I had said during one of our breaks we could go on for a couple more hours, and it would be great to have, this should be done at a dinner table over like 2 hours and have our listeners eavesdrop. I want to thank all three of you so much for joining us. It's been fun, it's been rich, and interesting. William Schweiker is a distinguished professor of theology and ethics at the University of Chicago Divinity School. He's the director of the Martin Marty Center for Advanced Study of Religion. Bill, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a delight.
Jim Cacamo is an associate professor of Christian social ethics in the Department of Theology and Religious Studies at St. Joe's. Jim, thanks.
Thank you very much.
And Darlene Weaver is director of Villanova's Theology Institute and associate professor of theology and religious studies. Darlene, thanks for coming out.
It's been fun. My pleasure.
It was fun. Next week, we'll take a break on Memorial Day. We'll have a rerun. We'll return on June 6th and discuss the state of what's good and what's not working so well in mental health care. Well, if you want to reach us with question or comment, we're whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Emily Haas and Evan Pliz is our interns. Welcome back for the summer, Evan. It's nice to have you back over there. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.